it's Friday. It's my favorite Lori and Julia show of the week, except for maybe Sex Monday. But we get a lot of fun stuff to talk about today. It's always New Music Friday, so that's coming up. And let's have some fun. Let's kick off the weekend.
How was your day off, Rocco?
It was super nice. You know, it was like I had some buddies in town. We usually get together for the NFL draft because we're kind of sports dorks that way. Mm-hmm. And so we went and had some beers and seafood at Sea Salt and then golfed at Fort Snelling and then watch the draft. It was quite the day off, so thank you.
Yeah, nice. Well, don't thank us. I believe you have all kinds of vacation days that are
that's true.
We all do.
Yep. Oh, gosh. I was so shocked. Casey did not watch the draft. He just watched his phone as his son was informing him because he's still penalizing the Vikings.
He is. Well,
why is he penalizing the Vikings?
Because he's a lifelong Viking fan and he continues to be crushed.
We are. Yeah.
So how he punishes them is, you know, I'm sure they're really worried about it.
Right. I went over to my neighbor's last night just to check in because it's nice out again. You can walk across. And she was watching the draft. I'm like, what are you doing? She goes, I watched it last year with my son and it's kind of interesting how it all, what happens behind the scenes and everything. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I thought, went home and thought, not going to do it. And Rebel didn't play last night on ABC because that's where the draft was.
That's right.
So I was kind of like.
So my mom was very disappointed because she's fallen hook, line, and sinker for that show.
Oh, it's so good. And Declan next door at Score North said they're very pleased with what the Vikings did.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah,
good.
They're
good.
Very, very pleased. Are you pleased?
Yeah, they drafted a big 6'5", 320-pound guy to block for Kirk Cousins and Dalvin Cook. So that's kind of what we needed.
All right.
Well, that's good.
A mountain of a man.
Larry likes to say that. In your prison, sexy prison warden, or what do you call my brother?
Sexy jailer.
My sexy jailer.
Yeah, he gave me a ride last night. And I'm like laughing, saying, you've got a couple of five more days till you let out your sexy prisoner?
Yes.
Until you're vaccinated.
I'm fully vaccinated. Yeah.
And he just laughed.
I know it.
She made her sexy jailer give me a ride last night because she was sick of me. We'd already been together all day. And
we'd been together since 11 in the morning for crying
out loud. And I needed
a
ride to get my car. And she's like, call Casey. He'll do it.
Just bond with your brother. When's the last time you hung out in a car with him?
It's been a while. It's been over a year, Lori.
Oh, I was so sad to see this in the Star Tribune today. Chris Riemann-Schneider wrote a notable obituary. Anybody who's a fan of Dr. Mambo's Combo, which is anybody who's the last 32 years going to bunkers, Billy Franz has passed away. He is a guitar great. He jammed with Prince and Johnny Lang, and he had announced last year his retirement from Dr. Mambo's Combo, and then Bunkers was closed. But he wanted to come back. He just wasn't for staying at home. And he passed away at his home in Eagan at the age of 72.
Oh, that's
so young.
Either a
stroke or a heart attack. And Chris really got some great stories. So Billy Franz regularly jammed with Prince and toured with Johnny Lang. And his nickname in Dr. Mambo's Combo was the Reverend. And talking to the Star Tribune for the 30th anniversary of Mambo's Combo in 2017, Billy was, or the Reverend, was less interested in bragging about the many times he dueled with Prince on guitar at the band show. He was more proud of how many combo members had gone on to play with Prince. He stole half the band for his own band, so that tells you something.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
He played on albums with Rosie Gaines and the Steels. He was part of the band that backed Mavis Staples when she toured as Prince's opening act in 1990. And Michael Bland, we had him on our show not that long ago for the song Enough.
I saw him a couple weekends ago at Minneapolis Music Cafe.
Yeah, and he said to Riemann-Schneider, Billy Franz might be the only musician I know who Prince never said a cross word to or about. One of Michael Bland's favorite Reverend stories about the combo gigs, Prince walked up from his regular booth at Bunkers, wrote a note on a napkin, and laid it at the guitarist's feet as he finished a fiery Jimi Hendrix mashup of Voodoo Child and the Star-Spangled Banner. And the note read, quit it, you're white. And that was Prince's way of praising him.
Yes.
And Billy Franz, a.k.a. the Reverend, backed the teenage Johnny Lang in the studio on his breakout 97 hit, Lie to Me. Then in 2000, he was enlisted to tour with Lang. And that was about a three-year tour. Another guitar whiz mentored by Billy Franz. Late Show with Stephen Colbert regular Corey Wong, who just said he was absolutely gutted to hear the news, but he said he just encouraged younger musicians to chase their unique sound, and really great guy. People also know him from, he was a regular on Organ Night at the Artist Quarter in St. Paul.
Say his name one more time.
Billy Franz.
All right.
And he played with everybody, you know, Doug Maynard, Mick Sterling, Patti Peterson. In the end, Lisa Franz said her husband's proudest achievement was Mambo's Combo. And Mambo's Combo was going to perform June 13th at the Hook and Ladder, an outdoor show. And it's still happening, but it'll be a tribute to Billy the Reverend Franz.
Oh.
Yeah, so.
That's very young.
Yeah.
That's young.
We've lost a lot of Twin Cities musicians.
Yeah, we
John
have.
Dickerson and. What?
The gal who was in here.
Oh, yeah. Why is her name escaping me?
No,
not Yolanda.
Lori, we won't do it. Never mind.
Shoot. It's just too many. But all right, moving on to just some other Minnesota news. Movie shoot is coming to the North Shore, Julia.
It is.
A feature film will be shot in Duluth and on the North Shore and all the way up to Grand Marais.
What's
next
the movie?
Month. It's you know, because they've been trying to attract productions.
Yes,
and
they've
got $1 million for rebates on film and TV. And the guy who's doing the movie, I don't know, Maximilian Salim. I don't know if he's Ali Salim's brother or something,
right.
But it's a psychological thriller about a Korean couple vacationing in northern Minnesota, and it'll shoot for 3 weeks, starting in May, Duluth, all along the shore, all the way to Grand Marais. And Maximilian, one of the producers and a St. Paul native, said, I've always been shocked at how this is a totally untapped frontier for production. And he didn't even know about the rebate, he said, but it's putting us in a position to succeed with an otherwise low budget, fairly ambitious project. So he said this rebate in this movie is going to put the region on the map. Another feature length movie, Way of the Warriors, started shooting on the Iron Range this winter with a $350,000 grant. So they're trying to get.
They're doing it up north. They're doing it up north. Good for them.
Yeah.
And you know, when you think about it, because like some of the shows we're watching, like Big Sky, which is shot in Vancouver, it doesn't look anything like Big Sky, Montana.
Right.
It doesn't. And I've spent 35 plus, we've spent so much time there. It doesn't look anything like it.
Yeah.
So to imagine having something really literally shot on Lake Superior on the North Shore and the beauty of that, it looks different than other places around the world.
Yeah,
so
really
that's really cool. I want to let everyone know the governor just tweeted out that the Minnesota State Fair, they're hoping to be a somewhat normal event this year. And that's the touchstone that everyone is waiting for. So we've been planning ahead like it's on.
It's on.
And it looks good to him. And he said with the vaccines going and everybody continuing to get vaccinated, and if you don't do it for yourself, do it for the young girl that just passed away in southern Minnesota. Do it for young kids. Do it for school teachers who have to keep going on and offline because kids are getting COVID.
Yeah.
Do it for other people. Think beyond yourself.
Thank
is
you,
all
Julia.
I'm going to say, and that is my thing. And you can get it on weekends, and you can get it if you're so busy, you can do it, you know, weekends.
Yeah, it's so easy. I don't know why people want to take a chance.
It's lazy. It's laziness, too. Getting it scheduled and stuff.
Lack of caring.
Yep.
Not caring about anybody but yourself and just thinking it's just me and I'll take my chances.
Yep.
Well, no, because you could be transmitting it.
Right. And the people who didn't go get their second shot, there's AARP Minnesota just did this big story on five things that benefit you to get your second silly shot, of course.
Yeah.
So you can go to aarpminnesota.org to find out more information there as well.
Very good. Well, when we get back.
Preach the preach, Laura.
Yeah, we got to do
hot vac summer. That's our tagline.
Yeah, hot vac summer. We're all for it.
Uh-huh.
All right, when we come back, it's Hollywood and we can't get enough of it. Everybody, thanks for hanging out with us. We're just going to get to a mishmash of Hollywood news. Ann Douglas, who's the widow of Kirk Douglas and the stepmother of Michael Douglas, passed away at her home in Beverly Hills at the wonderful age of 102. And she died a year and a half after her husband, Kirk Douglas, had passed away.
They lived a long time.
Yeah, they had quite a life. Yep. And they got married in 1954 after they met in Paris. He was filming a movie, Act of Love, and she was doing the publicity for the studio. And they had two sons, Peter and Eric. And then, of course, she was a stepmom, bonus mom to Michael Douglas. But one of the best Ann Douglas, Kirk Douglas stories is he was supposed to be on Mike Todd's plane.
That's right. Back and who's Mike Todd?
He was the husband of Elizabeth Taylor, maybe her second husband.
Yep.
And Ann said, "You're not getting on that plane. I don't know why. You fly commercial or you don't have a meeting now, but you're not going on that private plane." And as the story goes, like the next day after the
plane crashed,
the plane had left. When they were driving on the freeway, they pulled over when the radio came on and said Mike Todd and the three other people on that plane had all perished in a crash.
Right.
And he looked at her and he said, "I'm never not going to listen to you."
I love that.
Because they
that's
kind
a great,
of,
yeah.
She was just like, "No, I just have a bad feeling."
And that's when, of course, Elizabeth Taylor ran into the arms of Eddie Fisher, who was married at the time to Debbie Reynolds, and started their feud, which ended before Elizabeth Taylor and both of them died. Yes. They became friends.
So
we've...
Full circle on that one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so last night on Stephen Colbert, Mila Kunis is doing publicity. She's been around on a lot of different shows, and she's out because this movie, Four Good Days, is coming out, and it's a movie about addiction. Glenn Close plays her mother.
Oh, yeah.
It's based on a true story, and it's written by Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post writer Eli Saslow, I think. And it's a story about addiction, and it's heavy and it's hard. But she was on talking with Stephen Colbert about her husband and some of the things that he wanted to invest in and her thoughts on it.
Okay. And in this clip, it's Carson Daly introducing it, and his kid is in the background making faces.
So that's right.
If
okay,
you hear
so
people
we have
laughing.
One.
That's what okay. they're laughing at.
And finally, ladies and gentlemen, Mila Kunis. Last night, the actress sat down with Stephen Colbert and revealed some shocking investment advice. Oh, okay, we've multiplied here. That she gave her then boyfriend, Ashton Kutcher, nearly a decade ago. Ashton, famous for his business savvy, Kutcher was an early investor. I mean, he's made a killing. He was there early on Airbnb, Spotify, Warby Parker. But Mila admitted that she hasn't always been on board with some of the companies that Ashton has wanted to be a part of, particularly when he tried to pitch her the idea of Uber.
But he'll bring me companies and be like, "Here's a company we're thinking of investing in." So he's like, "This is company. It's kind of like a cab company, but anybody can drive the cab." I was like, "That's the worst idea ever. Why would this? What do you?" And he was like, "Let me get you this thing. It's called Uber. Let me just order it for you. You can test this out." And I was like, "You're going to put me in a car with a stranger? What is wrong with you?" Like, I was furious at him. That was first. Second time.
Uh-huh. But obviously he didn't listen to her.
Yeah, and another time he sat down and he's like, "Hey, babe, I got to explain this thing to you. Tell me if I'm crazy." He's like, "There's this thing. It's like mining for money. It's called cryptocurrency. And there's this company, this was eight plus years ago, and it's called Bitcom." And she's like, this is a horrible idea. I don't understand. Of course, he's an early investor in Bitcom. He was the first one to get
coin.
No.
Isn't it Bitcoin?
Yeah, that's, Bitcoin, excuse okay, me, yeah, Bitcoin. And he also was the first one to get 1 million followers on Twitter. I mean, he's been in the techie world forever and been ahead of it. She was darling on Colbert. I think she's darling.
I didn't know you pronounced her name Kunis.
Yeah, I mean, Carson would know, right?
Mila Kunis. We called it Kunis. But it's you. It's K-U-N-I-S. Yeah. Mila Kunis.
Carson called her Kunis.
Well, let's just call her Cuteness.
Okay. Oh, cuteness. I like it.
Let's call her Mila Cuteness, because she, I think, is really darling.
She really is. Mm-hmm. And speaking of darling, we're finally seeing a great photo of Josh Duhamel, who is the co-star in Shotgun Wedding with J-Lo. And Jennifer Lopez would like us to forget the dad bod hot picture side-by-side that A-Rod did 2 days ago. So she went ahead to her publicist and said, "Release something to People magazine." And it's two stills from Shotgun Wedding. They've just wrapped filming. So I don't know what happened with her and Lenny Kravitz, but we posted the photo.
She tagged him on her Insta thing.
Who? A-Rod?
No, J-Lo. She tagged Lenny Kravitz. She tagged.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. She tagged everybody. Yeah. But not J-Rod. Or well, A-Rod.
No, why would she do it?
Yeah, right. He's, not him. He's done. But that movie comes out 2022.
He's so handsome. And he's Bechdel another one so we handsome. Just felt like he was going to be a movie
well,
star.
Well, you know who knows him is our Donna.
Valentine?
Yeah.
Because he's from here.
No, he's from North Dakota, North Dakota. But Donna Valentine, she has a friend who's good friends with him. And
well, in our mind, we're good friends with them.
Best. Remember yeah. when Lori went to a Timberwolves game?
Oh, God.
Rocco, and I remember, and you had your long hair, and you were carded
that
night.
I just got my extensions. And 8 ounces of them.
8 ounces of extensions, and Lori had this long blonde hair, and she got carded.
Twice at that Timberwolves game.
Okay, and we're like in our 40s, you know, at this time. And so she's like, wow. And so then you came home, and you were like, Julia.
I was like, how was the game? I'm like, what game?
I never watched. I just sat and stared at this beautiful man. Don't you remember?
The binoculars, Josh Duhamel was courtside. And I just, once I spotted him, I never took the binoculars off. I knew everything that he was eating and drinking. When he went to the bathroom, I went to the bathroom. I didn't watch one second of the game. I was just like,
really tall, Julia. Oh, he's so handsome. Oh my gosh, he's so cute. And we thought, you know, Win a Date with Tad Hamilton was one of his earlier movies, and we just thought for sure straight. And he was on the TV show Vegas, Las Vegas, and he was obsessed with Fergie. Remember, she was a guest star on it or something.
That was a great show with James Caan, and he was, of course, Leo on All My Children.
Yes, he was.
Swept off a cliff into a raging river, never to be seen again. But that is always a comeback, possibly.
Absolutely.
Nobody.
Absolutely. But the thing about him replacing Armie Hammer
In this movie,
I love him.
I love that he got this gig. The movie's not going to be out till next summer, but if you want to see the photos.
She's looking... She's so gorgeous.
Yeah.
J-Lo. She really is.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of another, George Clooney is going to be turning 60.
Oh.
And
60 is the new 40.
That's what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. And that's what the kids are saying on the street.
He gave an interview to Us Weekly. And this caught my eye.
Okay.
This comment. About the two of them, he said, things haven't always run smoothly for the pair. They put constant effort into their relationship. Like any marriage, they've had their challenges and needed to adapt to certain situations and other challenges. It's taken compromise, establishing boundaries, and a lot of patience to keep the relationship on track, but they've done just that.
Have they been married even 5 years?
Oh, yeah. They've been
George and Amal. Yeah. All right.
But here's the thing that's I always wonder if this is tabloid reverse psychology.
Okay.
When they try to convince everyone that everything's perfectly fine, it makes me wonder if the opposite is true. I just thought it was odd.
Yeah, I do too.
That they're very solid right now, but things weren't always running smoothly. So I don't know. I hope everything is okay. But the thing I loved the most about it is he absolutely loves being a dad.
Oh, Lori.
I kind of thought Amal was going to be the hands-on and he was going to be sort of, you know, the fun dad, but not that involved. But sounds like he really loves being a dad. And
when you're older, everything is kind of just funny.
Yeah. And he, too, like many people turning the 6-0, he said, it's not great, but it's better than the alternative.
Right.
Which is what everyone has to say. All right. Listen. We will be back. We've got a great author. We're looking forward to talking to Patty Callahan. Her book is Surviving Savannah. We are always delighted to have another addition to the Lori and Julia Book Club. And we are so happy to have New York Times bestselling author Patty Callahan joining us for her latest book, which we loved, Surviving Savannah. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Patty.
Hi, ladies. How are you?
So we are good, and we both just loved this book so much.
Oh, thank you so much. That means so much to me. It's one thing to talk about the book. It's another to talk about it when you loved it.
Really did, and honestly, Julia has been to Savannah. Your book is going to make people want to go to Savannah very much.
Yes, it's lovely.
I've
read it, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's like, it's its own
character. It has its own personality. It, you know, this very mystical
and charming, and so charming. And so, if you're just joining us, Surviving Savannah is the book. I can't tell you how happy I was to read this. And Lori, we just absolutely loved it. So why don't you tell our listeners the setup of the book?
Absolutely. Surviving Savannah was inspired by the very true Lost to Time, which is a catnip to a historical fiction writer, Lost to Time, untold story of a shipwreck of a fancy steamship that blew up off the coast of North Carolina on June 14th, 1838. It was carrying the elite of Savannah and Charleston north for the summer. And when I first started researching it, I discovered that a shipwreck hunting crew had found the remains. So there's a modern day element in the story also.
Mm. This is, and so seriously, because you said it took someone, like a couple people mentioned it to you, and then finally the third time you're like, well, all right, I'll look into it. And literally, was that when they discovered the ship?
Isn't that crazy?
That's random. Yeah.
So there was a local mariner who kept trying to get me to write about this tragedy, and it never hit me right. And then finally it did. Like, he told me, and I got that thing. You ladies know the thing, you know, the chills on the back of your head, mm-hmm. down your arms. I was like, you know what? I'm finally going to look into this. I look into it, and I discover that, well, I was bringing up the lost stories of the passengers. Somebody else, unbeknownst to me, was bringing up the lost treasure and artifacts. So I melded those two stories together and just took it as a sign that it was time for this story.
Oh, Patty, so the ship was the, what is it? The
Pulaski.
Pulaski.
And you tell the story, you know, it's the between Everly, who's the Savannah College of Art and Design history professor, and she's asked to guest curate this exhibit of the recovered artifacts. And then you also tell in alternating chapters from the point of view of this one family, primarily Augusta and Lily in 1838, and that just like those few nights of when the ship exploded and they were at sea and everything. And it was so, like, I was just like, oh my gosh.
It's a page turner.
Yeah, it was we were on pins and needles every chapter.
Yeah, the historical characters and the historical parts of the story are all set at sea while
yes.
they're floating. You know, most of the passengers who survived, only a third survived, they spent 5 days and five nights floating on a broken piece of the ship. Mm-hmm. In the middle of the ocean,
yeah.
In the middle of the night, right? And those characters, especially Augusta, were based on a very real family. And that family had boarded with the mother, the father, six children, a niece and a sister. And he was one of the owners and stockholders in the ship.
It's just such a good book, Surviving Savannah, you know, and you also, you know, it's a story about loss. It's a story about working through grief, and relationships and just how different people express grief and come through it on the other side after a tragic loss. And you do it both in 1838 and in present day. Patty, I have a hard time reading really big, thick books. I'll just be honest. I couldn't put your book down. This was one of the happiest books. And your publicist did such a good job, Kathleen, reaching out to us because she said, I think you'll like this. And I'm like, oh, love.
Oh, thank you. Yes. When I first started writing it, like you, I thought, you know, how do I make, you know, all this tragedy hopeful and full of you know, uplifting, and, you know, who knew 2020 was coming? You
right.
know, I'd written it before the pandemic hit. And while I was writing it, I knew it was about survival. But like you just said, it ended up being about so much more. And it hit me about 3/4 of the way through the book that it wasn't just about surviving. It was about how do we survive the surviving?
Mm-hmm.
And what do we do after we survive something?
You have a classic line in it, and of course I left my book in my car, but you had a classic line about that, about surviving. It's more than just living. It's, you know, the conversation that she has with the guy that brought up the ship. I can't think of his name right now. Everly has.
Maddox.
And just Maddox, yeah. Maddox, how they both process their surviving. And how it's just so much more. It's just brilliant. You're a great writer. I'm sorry we've never read you before.
We're going to
now. Welcome to Patty World.
Well, we're thrilled. We're going to. Patty, you know, the other part of your book that I think that you also really, in a very moving and real way, explored the whole, you know, the history of Savannah and the enslaved people that
yes.
built Savannah, that made the city what it was, and you have that be part of the story. And I think that, you know, especially with everything that's gone on, and there's sometimes people don't realize when we say that there's systemic racism or that it's a 400 year trauma, there's sometimes an obliviousness to
100%. And yeah,
yeah, to that. So I like that you
included it, yes.
that part of the story and gave voice to that.
It was really important to me that I didn't like gloss over or add to the mythology mm-hmm. of the Old South, right? That I didn't put this kind of gossamer, and you know, because you visited Savannah, you can mm-hmm. go on the ghost tour, you can go on the antebellum tour, mm-hmm. you can go down to the riverside. And it's all beautiful, and it has this amazing mythology and legend and lore. I think one of my lines is, you know, our family is very big on legend and lore and mm-hmm. history and stories. And yet I wanted, which was part of what I could do in Dual Timeline, is to hold this old and imperfect South up against this new and imperfect South and not turn away from the truth and what it really was. It's mm-hmm. part of the story. To gloss that over doesn't do any of us any good.
Yeah, and you really, you
it
really,
was really
did.
You it was, honored.
It was great. It I loved. Was. I think it was. I can't remember if it was Everly's character. Or she's talking, and she's the one character says, "You and I both know there's a difference between prejudice and obliviousness, but sometimes it can have the same result." And I was just like, "Wow."
Yes. And I interviewed this woman when I was working for the book on the history of Savannah. She worked at a museum, and she used this great phrase I keep using, which is emancipating the past,
mm-hmm.
like letting it loose from the mythology and the kind of glossy thing we do mm-hmm. to make it look pretty.
Right, right. How long did it take you to research this?
Yes.
I love when you guys say the same thing at the same time.
I know.
You guys are adorable. it took me years. And the reason was a couple fold reasons, but mainly there's no seminal work out about this ship. There's no one book like the Titanic, right? Mm-hmm. There's no one source I could go to. So it was a gathering of many sources, many interviews, going museum to museum to museum, digging through file boxes at the Georgia Historical Society, trying to find the story and the relatives. And the other reason it took me so long is because, research-wise, is because so many of the passengers are so interesting. For example, one of the passengers who died was Judge Rochester, whose father founded Rochester, New York, right? And so I kept falling down all these rabbit holes
right.
of other passengers when I needed to be focusing on the family I followed. So I'd have to rein it back in, and then I'd fall down a rabbit hole and rein it back in.
I could see that. But I mean, the book is just so good. It's Surviving Savannah. We want to know about you. You're a co-host of a weekly web show and podcast called Friends in Fiction. Is that a new thing that you guys started doing in the year of the pandemic?
Yes. So that was the best thing to come out of the pandemic, except for my October book that I finished.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, four other New York Times bestselling authors, Mary Kay Andrews, Mary Alice Monroe, Christy Woodson Harvey, and Kristen Harmel, and I got together one day on Zoom because all five of our book tours had been canceled last March, and said, what are we going to do? And I know you all remember
a year ago, or 13 months ago, it was like, wait a minute, is the whole world going to collapse? Is publishing going to collapse? Is radio going to collapse? What's going to happen? So we got on Facebook Live just for fun, the five of us. Next thing we knew, it was a full-blown Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Facebook show. We've had on everyone from Kristen Hanna to Delia Owens to Sue Monk Kidd to, and so we had Jodi Picoult last week. So it has exploded. It's every Wednesday night at 7 p.m. on Facebook Live on the Friends and Fiction page, which is now almost 40,000 members strong in 1 year.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
We're going to check that out.
We are. You know what's interesting when you just said all that, Patty, is that so Lori and I have been on the air almost 19 years this June. And in the past year, we've done book reviews the entire time, but the past year, we've done like two novels a week. I mean, we're just...
Well, because reading has been such a big thing, and then also because we know that authors aren't able to get out there, and people kind of like our book club, and we try and have as many great authors on, like, what?
Well, what I want to say is two of the members that you have your Friends in Fiction Club with... Mary Kay Andrews, she's coming on in a couple of weeks for her new book. And The Book of Lost Names by Kristen Harmel, she's coming on. Fiona Davis for the Lions Fifth Avenue was just on.
Yeah.
I mean, we love the same kind of books.
On. She's a dear friend.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Look at us. We all love the same books.
I know. And so I'm glad we got to finally meet you.
I know. Me too. I'm really excited. Fiona just showed the cover for her new book that comes out in January.
She's brilliant. It's
beautiful.
The Lions Fifth Avenue was our favorite of hers.
Yep, I agree. 100% agree.
Uh-huh, 100%. That one had something. And then Lisa Wingate. I mean, we've had them. We love the same people. We love you. And we're so glad. The book is Surviving Savannah. This was such a treat for us.
Yeah. What was the last great book you read, Patty?
Excited about Mary Kay's. I'm so excited about Mary Kay's new one, The Newcomer. It's hilarious. It's got a mystery. It's fun. It's, you know, and then I just finished a book that blew me away. It was Matt Haig, The Midnight Library.
Oh, I just read that. Yes. Lovely.
Didn't you love it?
Yes. It's so different.
It was so different. I listened to it on audio and it made you think about.
I did too.
Because we can't help but think about, like, what would my life be like if I hadn't made that decision or that decision or. Yeah, it was fascinating. I loved it.
That's a fun book. You know, okay, so when you talk to Mary Kay Andrews next, she's on our show May 11th, would you? And the Book of Last Names is coming on too. Tell them you talk to us. Give them a thumbs up.
Well, because of our show, we text all day, every day. Probably like the people you do, right? Like, there's nobody we talk to more than the people we do a show with. I will hang up and I will tell them
Please do.
I can't wait to talk to them.
And is Reese Witherspoon going to not? This would be such a great miniseries or limited series.
I could not agree more. And just like the visuals of Savannah of the past, like lying over almost like those pages that you have that you can see through and you lay them on top. Mm-hmm. Vellum, you know, the old South with the new South and the families and what happened to them and are they going to live?
Here you go. Can we sing it, Rocco?
It's a good male female duet.
I want to share all my love with you. No one else.
Go to the state fair show.
Yes, yes. I went with my high school girlfriends.
That's pretty much my biggest FOMO of the last 10 years.
Yeah, Rocco.
My wife didn't want to go.
It was so fun, and two of my girlfriends got into an epic fight. It just was everything. It had everything: drama, dancing.
I think my wife and I got into a fight for not going.
She
was wrong.
She was wrong. She was very, very wrong. It was a super fun concert and every single song we knew.
And he was at Mystic Lake and we sat down with him at the Polo Lounge one night for Rocco, like an hour.
2 hours.
Oh, two hours, right. Hour and a half, I was going to say. It was And it was one of the most delightful nights we've had.
He's looking around for a camera. He thought they were filming us for a reality show. He couldn't believe it.
We were very silly that night.
That's yeah. Right.
Well, and you're sure it was him?
Oh, yeah. No, he invited us to sit with him.
Okay, good.
And our friend Tanya knew him.
She got
the invitation.
It was funny.
Got the go ahead. Okay, so he got to be solo guest. Thank goodness Andy Cohen didn't try and have Lionel Richie and a plus one in the clubhouse.
Yes, like Luke Bryan or anybody else from Idol.
Lionel had never been on, I don't think, because he was spilling all kinds of tea, telling all kinds of great story. We'll just start with the simple life, okay?
Tell me your reaction when you saw the first episode of The Simple Life with Nicole in Paris.
I said, there goes the family reputation right down the drain. I just, you have to know that I was not ready for anything Paris and Nicole were going to do. I was out of my mind. But I found out 5 weeks later into this thing, it was a hit. And then I realized, oh my God, the crowd loves this.
Right,
and
right.
From then on, I was the biggest fan ever. But I must tell you, they scared me too.
It was a journey. It was a journey.
It was a journey.
Okay.
He was such
Who
a
is
great
the first big
guest.
Actor artist?
Go ahead and just play the next one because we won't have time. So. Yeah.
Okay, so this is the Debbie Reynolds.
Debbie Reynolds.
Who was the first big actor artist to welcome the Commodores into the fold and help you gain exposure?
Oh, now wait, let me just tell you, I'm sweating to death over here. I don't know why that is. I think the person that I would say probably would be developing into the fold was Carrie Fisher's mother.
Debbie Reynolds.
Debbie Reynolds. Thank you very much.
Really?
Debbie Reynolds was the one who actually, when we came into town, she was the one who said, oh my God, you guys are fabulous. I'm going to show you around to all the people. And she took me by the hand and just took me to meet everyone. She was such a sweetheart.
Did not expect that.
That's two Debbie Reynolds story because Leslie Jordan has Debbie Reynolds calling his mom after he shows up in the National Enquirer. So then he's got to get to We Are the World, of course. So
this is so good.
Yeah, here we go.
Of the writing process with Michael Jackson.
Well, there's only one that comes to mind that scared me to absolute death was we were in Michael's room trying to write the lyrics to the whole thing, and I kept hearing this sound. And I kept thinking, what the heck is that? Well, to my right, by lying on the floor, I am eye to eye with his
snake
albino python.
Bubbles? No, that was the monkey.
This was not Bubbles. Bubbles was right. And all I can tell you was, I was screaming like the last horror movie in Hollywood. Okay, you understand me? And he kept, now here's the words that got me. He says, oh my God, Lionel, I found him. I knew he was in here somewhere.
Oh no.
But I haven't been, he lost a snake in his room for
Don't
the last
do
2 weeks.
Don't do me that way.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. All right, let's play the next, let's go to the Prince one.
Okay, sure.
Because that's shorter.
Yeah, sure. This is about Prince and We Are the World.
Yeah.
There was a rumor that Prince was supposed to be there, but he blew it off to go perform on Sunset Boulevard. Is that true?
Prince was at Carlos and Charlie's. I'll tell you the absolute truth behind this now, since you want to really know the dirt. And he said, I can come, but I want to record in a separate room. That was not what we wanted to hear. So the answer was, hang up the phone. We'll see you later. And that's where it happened.
I wonder if he ever wound up regretting that when he saw, you know.
I wanted him so badly to be there. But, you know, everyone had their own attitude at the time.
Yeah.
I'll say that in the nice way. And so Prince and Michael and I were all friends. But the point was, he wanted his in an isolated area. And we wanted to make this a united front.
Yeah.
Yeah, Prince probably didn't want to hear all those voices. And then he also told Andy that Bob Dylan was the most difficult person to lock down for doing the song. And we did know that about that.
But he was the first to show up, he said.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should check it out. On YouTube, there's like a documentary about We Are the World. And it's a pretty fascinating thing to have all those superstars in one room for one night.
But I mean, honestly, I could listen to Lionel all night long. And I love that Debbie Reynolds all night long. Oh, God, I didn't even mean to make that pun.
He's got stories and stories, and stories. He's delightful and humble.
Yeah.
Which is shocking. Yeah, he's wonderful. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.